Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Hear that? Believe it or not, summer is just around the corner. Luckily, Armor All, America's most trusted auto appearance brand, has what your car needs to get that perfect summer shine. Plus, now through May 31st, we'll give you $5 for every $20 you spend on Armor All products. That means car wash pods, protectant, tire shine, you name it. Find out how to get your $5 rebate at armorall.com. Armor All, less work, more clean. Terms apply.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome to DNF. I am Spencer Hall. I am joined, as always, by Jessica Smetana. This is the podcast where we discuss all things Formula One. And by all things, I mean anything attached to it that we really damn well want to discuss. Jessica, I understand you have something for me to see that we're going to start with.
Spencer, something happened during the British Grand Prix yesterday that I immediately knew had your name written all over it.
Yes.
And I didn't know if you had seen it or not, because I follow you on Twitter and we text during the races and you didn't say anything about it. So am I to understand this is the first time you're hearing of the Damian Lewis saxophone national anthem from before the race yesterday?
Yes, this is the first time I am hearing of it. We talked a little bit about it in pre-race, pre-show. Other than that, I know absolutely nothing about it. Would you like me to just sample it for the first time live here on DNF?
Yeah. All right. I'm sending you, I sent you a tweet. It has the audio in it. I think the entire, it's giving NBA All-Star Game Fergie vibes to me. I don't know if the Brits were too polite as to not like criticize it as it happened, because I didn't see a lot of insults on my timeline, but I want your honest reaction to this entire thing, because it was the highlight of the race for me.
Oh God, there's a saxophone.
There's a saxophone.
Yep. That's really bad.
We're off to a good start.
What? Oh, oh man. The Brits are holding this together, and I think that's very polite of them. Nobody's reacting.
Yep. I think they're all the best lad for that, because I would have been laughing my ass off, I think.
What? What on... What kind of a lounge singer? They threw this together in like 3 seconds. I know they did.
It's, yeah. I mean, I don't know if they rehearsed. I truly don't know how this came together. I tried to Google. I was like, is he in a band? Like, why Damian Lewis? Like, I know him from Homeland. I know he's British.
He's on Billions.
What is the other,
that's Bobby from
other
Billions.
What's the connection here? Right. Band of Brothers, but yeah, I don't know. I don't know.
The Times has a headline, "Why We're All Shook Up by Damian Lewis and His Version of God Save the King."
There people are writing stories about this, because when I looked yesterday, I didn't see very much written about it. And so I thought, am I an asshole? Am I reading this wrong? I'm glad the Brits are picking up on it now.
He does have an album. Mission Creep, which came out. So he does fancy himself a singer. and I'm glad he does. I don't think other people do necessarily, but it is described as a warm, rich debut covering a broad spectrum from folk rock to folk rock. Yes, this sounds
that
like...
But I'm, like, if it was a good album, the review would be like, the songs are really good.
yeah, an incredible effort as opposed to what a lark. Yeah, I didn't know Damian Lewis can sing, and I'm still waiting on proof of that because this sounded like karaoke. And I mean that, like, you can carry a tune with karaoke. Like, Jessica, can you carry a tune with karaoke? You're like,
oh,
I'm a confident karaoke singer.
Karaoke. Yeah.
Yes. But you could sing it and it would be like, ah, that person can carry a tune. I didn't say that they could take the tune, put it in a plane, make it soar. I mean, you can literally tote it from one line to another, correct?
Yeah. Yeah. I don't. Okay. Yeah. I mean, and like the American national anthem, famously very difficult. There's key changes.
Yeah.
People struggle with it. The British national anthem kind of hits one note, right?
Well, it's in the British tradition of things we can sing drunk with 30,000 other people at a sporting event. It's very, very good at that. Now, for anyone listening who's like, ah, that's not fair, I think it's a superior anthem to ours, which is...
Ours stinks.
It's just hard to sing.
Yeah.
The words are weird. It was written by kind of a jerk. Yeah. Like, and it steals the melody from what? A British drinking song. That's what
a bad one. And the other thing, I mean, the most difficult thing about God Save the King is remembering if you have a king or a queen or not, right? Like, one just died. All right, now it's a king. I feel like that would be the biggest struggle for me. But other than that, I mean, it's all pretty easy. And yet we had this yesterday, which I loved.
Yeah, yeah. Which, by the way, can we just say, fantastic weekend for Great Britain otherwise.
What a great weekend. Okay, they on Sky Sports treat this like it is their Super Bowl. And I love them for it. But they go crazy for the British Grand Prix. And I get it. It's their home race. Mm-hmm. They're probably all really happy they don't have to travel to like Abu Dhabi or Singapore or Mexico, somewhere really far away from home for a race. But they really... like David Croft loves to tell you that he knows the names of all the corners at Silverstone, right?
Yeah.
He loves to remind you of the Wellington Straight and the Hamilton Straight.
Abbey.
And Beckett's and Copp's Corner, which we all remember, of course, from the debacle with Hamilton and Verstappen a couple years ago. But yeah, he loves to remind everyone, like, guys, I know this.
This is ours.
This is my race.
This is ours. We can see them coming around all the way from Tesco Blinkies to Pip and Bubble.
Fish and Chippy.
Yes. All the way through to NHS Turnpike. Yes. Like, this is all of the various ways in which we can, like,
10
claim
Downing
our...
Street.
Yeah. All the ways that we
22B Baker Street. I'm just naming addresses.
Soggy Crisps. See how it's Soggy Crisps. Like, it is gloriously British the way that they do this. I love how unchill they are about it, that when they come
chill
to Silverstone, it is very much, yes, it is their Super Bowl. It is the point where we get the most jingoistic coverage of it, where we, you know, it's like, yeah, it's Max Verstappen, yes, he's going for a hat trick, and he's clearly going to be 99 points ahead of everyone by the time this finishes. But look at Lando Norris! Like, that's, which, to be fair... that's our headline. Look!
Is that why you're wearing your orange today? Your papaya
As
shirt?
A Florida fan, I'm always kind of half in McLaren's bag anyway. Yeah. But sure, that's why I'm wearing the orange today in honor of Lando Norris and Oscar Piastri, right? A victory for the Commonwealth.
What a weekend for the Commonwealth.
Yeah, if we had to expand it a little bit.
That's what Queen Victoria said, too.
Hey.
Yeah, Britain... a strange country that we love to make fun of as Americans do.
Dad.
Yeah, exactly. Like ex-stepfather, I guess.
Yes.
but you know what? I'm happy for them. They had a very British Grand Prix weekend. Mm-hmm. I mean, we'll get to McLaren. McLaren looked unstoppable except for, you know, if you're in a Red Bull and you're Max Verstappen this weekend.
Yeah.
And the anthem was spectacular. The weather was perfectly Silverstone. It was rainy when it needed to be rainy. It was sunny when it needed to be sunny. We loved that for them. The broadcast was great. But we also had a very British debacle, which was Martin Brundle and Cara Delevingne getting into a now an internet beef about him wanting to talk to her on the gridwalk. So we need to talk about all of these things. And we have lots and lots of listener questions, Spencer. But where should we start? Also, Brad Pitt was there. How did I not even mention?
Sure.
They're filming a Hollywood movie this weekend in Silverstone. It was a crazy weekend for Formula One.
They are. And by the way, according to some, the driving rig used by the movie producers is nicer than some of the teams. And the pit layout was nicer than some of the team's actual layouts. So I wonder who he's talking about. Williams. But I can't believe I'm speaking ill of Williams when Alex Albon's doing so well.
I know. On a British Grand Prix race weekend also.
I know. How dare I?
Never mind. Yeah. I was going to say, like, Logan Sargeant racing for Williams. I feel like there's a Commonwealth former, you know, but never mind. Forget it.
Speaking of good news that we will talk about, by the way, P11 for Logan Sargeant. Not
nice.
Listen, in a
barely out of the points.
In a year of lows, we'll take barely out of the points as a bright light at the end of a tunnel, which may just be the oncoming train rushing towards him. We'll take it as hope anyway. But I think we're talking about the thing that we always have to talk about, which is this. Max Verstappen won. This is 2023. Congratulations. You're very good.
Yeah.
Like, I hate to yada, yada, yada every Max Verstappen victory because it really is going to end up being one of the most historically dominant performances in the sport's history. However, yada, yada. We don't have to do we don't have to do that retrospective yet, do we?
Like, no,
we
don't, not at all. I think the thing about Max Verstappen is, like, we can yada, yada, yada him because there is consensus that he is great. He is the best this year. He is one of the greatest of all times already. He is in the fastest car, and there's really, like, not a lot up for debate. He doesn't make mistakes. When he does make a rare mistake, like his start in the Grand Prix on Sunday morning, he makes up for it pretty quickly.
Yeah.
Even though, like, the McLaren, it was, you know, there was a battle there. Like, it was really fast. He won by not a very big margin this weekend because of safety cars and tire deg and all of that. But he still won very handsomely, and he's the best. Like, there's not a lot there to debate, so we can move on.
Not quite yada yadding, but we'll just go ahead and say granted. Yes, don't do the thing that I have already seen people doing where they say, "Ooh, McLaren on rushing towards them, actually challenging Max Verstappen for 3 seconds during the race for, you know, 3 to 5 laps. Could this be them catching up to the rest of the—" Don't do this to yourself. Don't. There's no catching up. There is no drama. There will only be marginal improvements and these kind of little stories that we have where we say, wow, good for McLaren, continued improvement, looking towards 2024. Every one of these storylines that we discuss for the moment, as long as Max Verstappen is running that far out of things, can be read with an implied looking toward 2024, okay? Or maybe not implied, maybe an explicit one, as Toto Wolff said after the race, when he said, yeah, the Diva 2.0 isn't doing it. Y'all know that we're basically on to 2024. That's it. Like, he can't say it enough times. It is nice that Mercedes did real well in this race and had a pretty strong performance, top fives for both drivers. However, that's not the story, okay? So whatever we're discussing right now will only apply to right now with the implied, y'all... 2024 is the actual drama. That's what we have to assume. But in terms of, like, satisfying micro stories, McLaren coming from the depths, McLaren coming from looking like, at one point, I think they looked like the second worst program on track this season.
I think they were maybe statistically the slowest car in at least the first few races. Like, they were back of the pack. I mean, it was disastrous.
It was as bad as you could get for a team with that kind of track record, lineage, and expectations coming out of 2021, 2022. And yet, we see Lando Norris, podium, second, at one point leading this race and actually giving Max Verstappen a what for for several laps. A real thing that happened after all of that misery. And on top of that, after Oscar Piastri coming along and maybe giving some people some hesitation about the switch to him as McLaren's number two driver in the offseason, him coming along and him getting a P4 and looking as good as he did and overcoming everything that he's had to experience this season. That's, to me, the story of this race, is McLaren on home soil, on the Sceptred Isle itself, putting up a 2 and a 4. That's damn impressive.
Yeah, and I think what was the most impressive about Lando's race was his defending against Lewis Hamilton, too. Yeah. And Lewis said after the race that the McLaren's straight line speed was just so fast and there was just no way he could get around him. But there was a real battle there for a while for between Lando and Lewis Hamilton, you know, one of the greatest Formula One drivers of all time. And Lando really held his own and it was super impressive. And I think if there hadn't been the safety car when it was, because Piastri had already just pit, he probably would have gotten that third place finish. And so we would have had a double McLaren podium for the first time since Monza, when Daniel Ricciardo and Lando Norris were on the podium together in 2021. So it was a humongous weekend for them. And I think you can't really look at the story of this weekend without remembering what the McLaren team has been saying for the last like 6 months or so, which was that, you know, this upgrade was going to be the real moment when they were, you know, really battling with what they knew they needed to compete this season. And it's unfortunate that they weren't able to get this ready by, you know, the first race of the season, because they weren't on the right track early enough to do it. But now they finally are here, and we're getting a little glimpse at like what they've actually been working on and where they could be by the end of the season going into next year, when the competition is going to be open again and we don't have a champion in first place already with a 100-point lead on everyone else. So I think it does really set up an exciting second half of the season for the middle field. Lando, I think he's in sixth place now in the driver's standing, somewhere around there. But McLaren already has bounced up to fifth in the Constructors' Championship. Mm-hmm. Actually, I might be wrong. Lando might be like seventh or eighth. I don't remember off the top of my head. But the points he got this weekend were massive, considering they have been hard to come by. So it was a huge weekend for them. It could have been even a little bit bigger had there not been that safety car. But we had one question from a listener who said, is McLaren going to push like this for the rest of the season? I think so. I think that they think that they're up there with the Mercedes and the Aston Martins, and they're going to be strategizing for a podium and not, you know, sitting back in 12th or 13th trying to figure out what the hell went wrong. They've got to figure out how the tires work in all of this. I think there was some disagreement on like soft or hards at the end for Lando, but
yeah,
I mean, besides those things, like there's no reason why they can't. If this is the top line speed that they're able to get with this upgrade, like there's no reason not to do that.
On high-speed corners, too. That's
the
thing where you go, okay, well,
so
can this thing roll? Well, this is a track that really favors high-speed aggression, as opposed to some of the slower tracks where we're going to talk more about handling and about, you know, cornering and maneuverability. This is one where this car is, you know, if this is what this car is good at, then the potential is, to me, very, very promising for at least an amount of intrigue, right? Like at this point, that's what we're looking for. We're looking for improvement and amount of intrigue and storylines that continue beyond the horizon. McLaren's offering that right now, if that's what they've got. Are they going to backslide? Just prepare yourself for a backslide, because Hungaroring's a very different kind of track, right? Than Silverstone. You're not I doubt you'll see the same kind of performance there, because it doesn't seem like that the car and Hungary are going to get along quite as well as the McLaren and Silverstone. But still, that's the kind of intrigue you want. And remember, it's a zero-sum game. In other words, if McLaren is the dog biting at the pant leg, then somebody else is the ass getting a piece chewed out of it. In this case, that might be several teams. Aston Martin, it was a disappointing outing for them, especially because you can see Aston Martin's building from the entrance to Silverstone. It's right there.
It's tough.
It is their literal backyard. It is their home island. It is their home track. And this is not where they wanted to end up, particularly, again, Lance Stroll. I think within variation, we can say that, you know, Fernando Alonso himself said it after the race. They're ahead of where they thought they would be, and they're pretty happy about it. Lance Stroll, continuing to struggle, gets a 5-second penalty following a late race altercation with, I believe, Pierre Gasly. of Alpine, a penalty that he was not happy about. I think they were disappointed in how they did. I think as bad as they were, as disappointing as they were, I can't say they were outright bad. There was a team that was outright bad. That
does it start with an A and rhyme with Alween?
Okay, so there were two teams that were outright bad, Jessica.
Oh, wait, were you thinking of a different one?
Oh, I was thinking of a different one.
Which one were you thinking of?
I was thinking of one that once again could not get out of their own way and suffered a mysterious
Ferrari
fainting spell down the stretch. That's correct. I was thinking of Ferrari. Why do you think Alpine had a bad day? This is sometimes, you know, when a judge asks questions like, why do you think this dog has rights? Like, that's what I'm asking right here. I know the answer. I just want you to say it. Why do you think Alpine had a bad day, Jessica?
Well, they've been having a really bad season. So there was an early retirement from Esteban Ocon during the race, which is never a good sign. And they've already had tons of upheaval with people in charge saying that certain people maybe need to start getting fired because they're not doing their jobs properly. So then when you go into one of the marquee events in the entire sport, which is Silverstone, I think you put it on a pedestal probably with like three or four other races, and that happens. It was super disappointing for them. Not at all the weekend that they wanted coming into the British Grand Prix, but also pretty par for the course with the season that they're having.
Yeah, I think they had the worst. Like, I want to say bad for Ferrari, and it's bad for different reasons. But Alpine had absolutely the worst performance because a DNF in last, you don't, there's only one way to do worse than that. And it's the double DNF. And as much as we appreciate the tribute to the title, it's not where you want to be racing-wise. And I almost feel like it's not fair to say, you know, like when you're talking about Alpha or when you're talking about AlphaTauri, these are two teams that I think and Haas, we're talking about, you know, these are teams that are at this point resigned to occasionally flashing during qualifying, maybe sometimes stealing a point or two at the top 10 angle. Williams sometimes falls into that category. Ferrari, though, among teams that are actually allegedly competitive,
continues to refute
our faith in switching management. Like, this is Ferrari, you're devastating for middle management, is what I'm saying. You're devastating for everybody who thinks you can actually fix a problem by firing somebody. And I hate that because I like firing people. I'm the kind of sports fan. I'm like, you know what made me feel good? If you fired that guy, that made me feel great. But yeah, I am absolutely, I was aghast at just how weak Ferrari looked down the stretch. And I know everybody forgot what tires were in this race. There was kind of this late stage, late race anxiety over we go softs, we go hards, right? And it bunched up the top three in terms of tire degradation and tire choice. But Ferrari had no idea what to do down the stretch.
Right.
And none of it worked.
When your car is performing inconsistently, it is hard to create strategy around the types of tires to use. And that was partially what Carlos Sainz was saying after the race. Like, the conditions were difficult. It was a 50-50 call and they got it wrong. And I get that. But the inconsistency of the car then has like all these compounding ripple effects. And you go from, I think, fourth and fifth in qualifying to ninth and 10th at the end of the race for both Ferrari cars. So super frustrating weekend for them. But again, it's like more of the same. It's like, if you can't get the car to work the same way every time, even if it's like the same way isn't great, then trying to choose the right tire for it or the right, you know, setup for a race is just, you're never going to be competing as highly as you think your car should perform, because they're just like guessing, essentially, what it sounds like.
I, you know, we've discussed here before whether, you know, the psychology of Charles Leclerc matters a whole lot in terms of relative to the performance of the car. Like, he will be more confident and he will be more consistent if he has faith in the product that they are putting underneath him. And I was kind of skeptical for that for a long time, but after watching the race summary at Silverstone and watching Leclerc, dude's brain is fried when it comes to having faith in what his team is doing. And I mean, at almost every level, whether it's strategy, whether it's the technical performance of the car, there doesn't seem to be a whole lot of evident trust there between driver and between team.
As there shouldn't be.
No,
which is fair.
it makes sense. I know somebody might want to bag on him, be like, hey man, you gotta overcome the obstacles, right? You gotta Alex Albon this shit. Okay, don't Alex Albon it, because Alex Albon's racing to Williams and everybody knows what he's dealing with, and the expectations are like ninth.
Yeah.
If you can pull ninth or eighth in a Williams, that's a right. miracle. You pull eighth or ninth in a Ferrari, you're pulling eighth or ninth in a Ferrari. That's a letdown, and yeah. should be considered a letdown.
Well, we have a couple more questions from the actual racing part of the race before we move on to other things. But one fan asks, is it time to feel bad for Checo? I mean, you can answer the question first, but I feel like it's hard to feel bad for Checo, but I do feel I feel for him. I feel something for him, but he's very rich and gets to race cars for a living. So I don't know if I feel like bad for him.
Nah, I don't feel bad for him. You know what your deal is. If you don't know what the deal is at this point, if you do not understand that in a classic analogy that you are the Daffy Duck in this particular scenario. And
can you explain?
Max Verstappen is, you are the second banana. That is what you okay. are. And you will be treated thusly. And by the way, rewarded handsomely for it, and that you are more than welcome to eventually test the waters otherwise in this very tiny little goldfish of an environment that they have. I have a hard time feeling really bad for number two drivers unless they are 100% right there with the number one. That to me is the point where if I feel like you're being manipulated out of competition to an egregious extent, you know, as opposed to like, okay, well, we'll give the number one guy the absolute best package and we'll give you the one that is 99% as good.
Yeah.
If they send you out there in a wheelbarrow and give you an air horn and tell you good luck, that's when I start feeling bad for you. But that's not Checo's deal.
Yeah. I mean, do you have any guesses as to why he's not performing at least like close to what the way Max is performing over the last five races? Like he's not doing well even in qualifying. And because the car is so fast, he's ended up kind of saving a few races and finishing okay. But like the amount of dominance the Red Bull has over the other cars should seem to be evidence that he should be up there on the podium every single weekend, no?
Well, we assume that they're exactly the same car.
Assuming they're the same, which we know, like, they're probably not, you know, there are ways that they manipulate the cars to suit drivers and tracks, and there's certain upgrades only one driver can get sometimes that the other one can't get. And, you know, one strategy is the A strategy and one strategy is the B strategy. Yeah. We know those things, but assuming they're, like, somewhat similar.
Yeah, I would not. I think if all things were equal, I might just say this was, you know, a head issue for him. And I do think there's some psychology to it. I think if you get close to being competitive to somebody and then your teammate just races ahead of you, he probably feels a little isolated. I think that's probably fair. You know, it's very hard not to feel overlooked, even if you're being overlooked justly. You know, like, I think it's like if you're looking at them and you go, oh, this guy's doing that and you're doing this. And part of that may be by design. But at the same time, I think it's probably hard for a competitor to accept that. We've seen less rational things, right? Like we assume, oh, hey, you're the number two guy. You should just be, you know your role, be super enthused about it. I think that is true. However, I think for anybody who's naturally competitive, I could also understand it kills me a little to be that guy. You know, even if I know the math doesn't work out, right?
I feel bad for him in terms of just racing. Everything else he's doing fine. Because like even if your fallback plan is to like, maybe you get replaced this season and they replace you with Alex Albon or whoever the going theories are. Like your fallback can be to race for like a lower team like Valtteri Bottas is doing this year. And he seems like he's having a pretty good time.
I think he's making a lot of money to
ride his bike and drink coffee and be naked and stream. So like the alternative's still pretty good if you ask me. But
I mean, yeah,
these guys are also super competitive. So
they are super competitive. You know, Valtteri spends like what 20 hours a week on his bike. Something if his Strava data is to be believed.
Okay. I follow him on social medias, and if I were like a random bystander and just looked at his social accounts, I'd be like, oh, this guy's a professional cyclist. Like he looks like that's what he does for a living. It's crazy to me how much he loves cycling. I get it. Like, cycling's fun, but good for him. I love when people have hobbies outside of the sport that they play. I think that's a very healthy thing.
I think it would be unfair to boil the entire nation of Finland down to a series of cheap stereotypes, but I'm about to boil the entire nation of Finland down to a series of cheap stereotypes. And one of them is this: man, you can't stop them from racing. Whatever it is, like two wheels, four wheels, three wheels, six wheels, that they're going to race it. Like, Kimi Raikkonen was infamous for, you know, racing boats in his spare time, right? Things that didn't even have wheels. You can't stop Valtteri from randomly showing up at an 80K mountain biking race somewhere in Ouray, Colorado.
Respect.
That's just, can't stop him, man. It's just culturally, it's a thing they value, which is getting in a vehicle and attempting to take it very quickly.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have a question for you.
Yeah. Yes.
We all saw Cara Delevingne and Martin Brundle get into a tête-à-tête, a contretemps. Choose the French word of your choosing for a brouhaha on the grid when Cara Delevingne, the actress, was told not to speak with Martin Brundle by her people. She did exactly that. And then Martin Brundle said, I'm sure it would have been stimulating?
Was like, I'm sure that would have been very stimulating. He did like a classic Brundle-y kind of retort to it.
He did. And now this, of course, is the thing that people want to talk about after the race. Now that they've done the thing. Everybody did the thing we did, which is Max is great. Good job, McLaren. Some interesting stuff with Mercedes. Ferrari's messed up and everyone else is struggling. This is the thing that people want to talk about now, because it's somebody being rude to somebody else and someone else being rude in
to Martin
return.
Brundle. No, don't be mean to Martin Brundle. What has he ever done to deserve someone being rude to him? Like, this is his whole shtick, right? So when I saw this happen, I thought it was like a nothing burger, which is such a lame word that I don't actually like to say. Like, who came up with nothing burger? Anyways, I digress. I watched it and I was like, this is okay. Like, this happens all the time. This happened with Megan Thee Stallion like two or three years ago in Austin. Celebrities.
But by the way, this is interesting to me because there's a different mistake. Brundle got this. This is a reverse situation. He really didn't know. She really didn't know who Martin Brundle was, right?
Who, and Megan or?
Megan didn't know who Martin Brundle was, right? And then had somebody bodily get in between
her bodyguard. Yeah, her bodyguard like stepped in,
right?
And yeah, so there was apparently like a thing that Sky Sports and F1 decided to institute called the Brundle Clause. I don't know if this is like a written codified clause in the grid handbook.
I doubt it.
I doubt it too.
It feels like an unwritten rule to me.
But people always talk about the Brundle Clause whenever one of these things happens, which is now that if Martin Brundle wants to talk to you, like, you have to, I guess, or like what does the clause say?
They've turned him into some kind of magic elf, right? Like, if he appears in front of you, you have to speak with him, or a curse shall befall your house. Like, that's what happened. And I'm actually like, I don't think you have to take, by the way, these are all parasocial relationships. They're not real. You don't really have to take a side in this. You can laugh at it. That's cool. That's fine.
Right. I mean, to be honest, when I first heard about this, I was like, I'm not paying attention to this. This is very stupid. And then I saw how big it blew up on social media and how nasty some of the comments were about it. And I was like, okay, this actually maybe is telling of something.
Why are you going to get nasty about it in order to say this? One, Martin, they don't all have to talk to you. Right. They don't. No one's obligated to talk to you. You're in an impossible situation. We've discussed it before. Martin Brundle is let loose in a chaotic situation for 10 minutes, 15 minutes every single week, and no one can be good at it. In fact, he's probably the best at it because everyone else would be rank terrible. Like, if I was doing this, it'd be the strugglest footage you've ever seen. Just the strugglingest television ever.
Yeah,
right?
It would be terrible. Well, so, okay, I found some deets on the Brundle Clause, according to Sky. He told them that there have been new rules introduced, doesn't say where or how, that any celebrities on the grid must not have bodyguards any longer. He explained, it must be the, quote, Brundle Clause, and they're obligated to talk to me. I sort of like it if they ignore me, to be honest. So, like, his whole shtick is very kind of tongue-in-cheek, and it's very, like, I'm being a snob, but I'm trying to be nosy at the same time. Like, that's why I kind of brushed it off as like, she was very polite to him. She was like, I don't want to talk to you. No, thank you. And like, he was very like snobbish and snide about it, made his little comment, and we moved on. And I get why her fans are probably upset, because it was rude like that. But that's what he does. And I don't think he cares that he's being rude. I think that's his whole thing.
He doesn't care because he has to go out and do this again next week.
Right. He doesn't care at all. So like
in Hungary, where he will probably like accidentally offend the biggest pop star in Hungary. That's what he'll probably do.
Oh, for sure. I mean, he got Paolo Banchero and Pat Mahomes confused with one another. And if I were Pat Mahomes fans, I would have been mad at that too.
If you've ever done live TV, you know this. It's a disaster every week.
Yeah.
It's just sometimes people catch you doing it as opposed to just not noticing what an actual unfolding disaster it is. I would also say this. You know, do you know who Nardwar is?
No.
Nardwar is a legendary hip-hop journalist from Canada who is the goofiest white dude you've ever seen in your life. And what Nardwar does is he does a tremendous amount of research and then approaches a rapper backstage and says things like, "Hi, I have a copy of the first album I know you ever bought because I went to the record shop and asked them, right, what the first album." So he does this like insane research, and he's sort of beloved, especially among sort of like alt hip hop circles. You know, like Lil Uzi Vert like hugs him and is like, "You need to call me. I was worried about you." You know.
I've definitely seen this on the interwebs.
Yeah. So Playboi Carti sort of like stiff armed Nardwar the other week, and it was kind of a referendum on Playboi Carti, because how you treat Nardwar is sort of like an indication of like what sort of a person you are. You need to know your environment and who you're talking to, because that's Martin Brundle and that's The Grid, man. Like that would be my one takeaway. I'm like, Cara Delevingne, you're young. I believe she's like just barely turned 30. You got to know where you are and who you're going to bump into. And when you bump into Martin Brundle, someone could be like, "Hey, don't be a dick to that dude." Even if he's probably going to be a dick the other way, because this is his playground. Know your context.
Yeah, I don't think she was.
I don't think she was a dick. I don't think she was a dick either, right?
Yeah, and I think that there's like, if it had just happened and there was like no further follow up on it, it would have been a fine interaction. Like, it would have been par for the course for a grid walk. But the way that people have like reacted to her, and she's tweeted about it a few times, so I've mostly just seen this on Twitter, has been very, very not passing the vibe check. Like, it's a silly thing. It's supposed to be like a very silly, Martin Brundle walks up and down, he talks to celebrities, they give him nothing, he tries to, you know, he pokes fun at them, but he's mostly poking fun at himself, and then the race starts, and it's supposed to be kind of chaotic and messy, and that's the whole gist of it, and that was exactly what the interaction was. And did he take it maybe too far? Like, yeah, but again, I don't think he cares. And if the fan reaction hadn't been so like nasty towards her, then I think this probably would have all been just, you know, another thing that happened that we would have been talking more about Damian Lewis today. But the reaction has been literally insane, which is to be expected because the internet is a toxic place full of mostly misogynists who feel like they have like some, you know, entitlement to, like, there's been a lot of like fan reaction that's like, if you're a celebrity and you don't want to talk to Martin Brundle, like, get the hell out of F1. And it's like, okay, like, really? Like,
man, listen, again, this is why you gotta
have our awkward interactions.
This is why you gotta have good people, man. Somebody's gotta be on Cara Delevingne's side and be like,
yeah,
no, you should probably at least say hi to that guy. That's it, you know. Know where you are. Don't pretend don't make the party about you, and unless it is about you, which frankly The Grid is mostly about Martin Brundle from a TV perspective.
That's true. Well, there was one other celebrity thing that happened this weekend. I don't know if you've been paying attention to Brad Pitt at all, but he's filming a racing movie. And the tag, well, all I can really find out about this movie from IMDb is that, quote, follows a Formula One driver who comes out of retirement to mentor and team with a younger driver, end quote. And it's in pre-production. So they were filming it at Silverstone. Will you watch this movie when it comes out?
Yes, I will. And I will probably have all sorts of lack of critique about it, because when I enter a movie, I don't expect anything to be super accurate. I know there's an entire wing of F1 fans that are going to complain about the tire composition in this film. That's absolutely going to happen. Somebody will be like, "That's not fair. That's not accurate." I don't really care. Lore accurate, I'm not particularly interested. Sure, I'm like, I'll watch any footage of something going super fast. That seems awesome.
Yeah, I mean, as long as it's shorter than Ford versus Ferrari, I'll watch it. That movie was an hour too long. But
yeah,
I'm excited that all the F1 drivers are going to be like background characters in it.
Oh, that's another thing too. Don't you want to see that? Don't you want to go ahead and get jokes off about this? It really can't be, I think, a super fun movie, right? Like, it's probably more on the drama side, because I just don't know if F1 lends itself to comedy.
But Brad Pitt has been doing, like, comedy action roles for a while now, right? Like, did you see Bullet Train?
Yes.
I'm thinking it's going to have, like, Bullet Train comedic action sequences in it.
This leads me to ask you, mm-hmm. I need you to just go ahead and give me the two drivers that you would need who you think would probably be the best on screen. For cameos.
Charles, certainly. Mm-hmm. Definitely not Lando. I don't think he could play it straight. I think he's too giggly to act. Maybe Lewis. I mean, Lewis has enough proximity to stardom mm-hmm. that I think he's acted in commercials, he's modeled. I think he'd mm-hmm. be pretty good on screen.
Yeah, I'm going to take George Russell playing nothing but George Russell. If I can have George Russell being as naive as possible, that is what I would want. Like, large, naive George Russell. And additionally, I would go ahead and take, I would take Valtteri. But Valtteri, again, can only play himself. I need him to be as flat as possible.
You know what I was just thinking? Maybe this is too conspiratorial, but maybe the Damian Lewis national anthem was for the Formula One movie, and they were filming it to put in the movie, and he's in the movie, and there's some sort of like comedic mm-hmm. relief by him doing it.
Yeah.
Because that's really still the only explanation I can think of for that entire debacle. And basically, Spencer, the beginning of this race was a hot mess. Because you had that gridwalk thing happen, shit hit the fan, and then you had this weird sax going on, and all of the nice British men just stood there and didn't laugh. It was a hot mess.
And then
Lando took the lead of the race.
If you wonder why the British are the kings of cringe humor, this is why.
It felt like a Monty Python sketch, honestly.
Yes. I want to discuss something that was controversy-free, which is from Omar brings up, ahem, please discuss, and then links to a tweet to an F1 Insider article about Daniel Ricciardo replacing Nyck de Vries during the summer break. Prior to Silverstone, we would have definitely said Logan Sargeant was the most disappointing of all of the rookies to this point. A P11 at least shows some life. It shows a pulse for his candidacy to maintain his status as an F1 seat holder. Nyck de Vries, not quite the same story.
Yeah, well, there's been a ton of Helmut Marko has made comments on podcasts about him not having the juice and being wrong about him. And there's been a lot of rumors about this. So, like, usually when there's smoke, there's fire, I guess. But I like, this would be a pretty big deal. Like, he's a little bit older than a lot of the other rookie drivers, but it's still the, you know, first half of the season to have made a decision on it by now, I think is pretty shocking to not at least give the guy like a full year to race. But I don't know. Why? Do you think it's fair?
No, I don't think it would be fair at all. I think you would give somebody a full season if you want it to be truly fair. Also, I don't know what in particular you are gaining by switching drivers at this point. Is the team that desperate for social media likes? Do they need a podcast? Like, that to me is what you're offering when you say you're going to trade out Nyck de Vries, who has still growth potential as a driver, with Daniel Ricciardo, who is, I think, a known and limited quality as a driver.
Right. Well, we've seen the ceiling, I think, on Daniel Ricciardo, and it's pretty high. It's higher maybe than Nyck de Vries is. So, like, is he a better driver? Like, I think so. I think he's got more experience. He probably mm-hmm. But again, it's like, it's hard to even consider Ricciardo, having watched him the last two seasons, where he was really, really struggling and it seemed like had a lot going on mentally. I really don't know, like, how to even compare the two, but it sucks for de Vries, because you have to imagine, like, it would be tough to get another seat in F1 after not making it through a rookie season, especially when, like, Red Bull, the biggest and most accomplished team at the moment, is talking about you publicly and doesn't have any faith in you as a driver.
Yeah, yeah. This is related to the other question that I have, or related to another question somebody asked, which I don't want to answer in full. I just want to state it because it's a hilarious question. Considering Checo's poor performance as of late, might it be time for Red Bull to bring back Alex Albon? That is from Brian Whitaker. And Brian Whitaker, I salute you because you, like me, will always hit the trade button. You're the kind of person who gets that NBA trade machine going and just puts all kinds of nonsense into it and switches it. I love it. It doesn't really make a whole lot of sense, but I appreciate the enthusiasm for it. I got one more question, and it is also one that I am reading just to share with you a choice piece of phrasing. And yes, maybe a take or two about it. Jessica from Ebony Navidad. How does the McLaren BBL affect other small teams like Ferrari? I want you to consider that somebody just used the phrase McLaren BBL.
Like, I think it works. Is that the tweet that someone tweeted us that a bunch of spam bots are now replying to?
Probably. If you put BBL, you probably tend to get a bunch of spam bots.
Do you want to explain that one?
That would be a Brazilian butt lift. Yeah, a Brazilian butt lift where you go and get some stuff rearranged so the booty is bigger, higher, and fuller than it used to be. Terrible surgery, by the way. Like, absolutely. It's probably
super dangerous.
It's probably much simpler to actually add on all of the like package details and implements and accessories that McLaren bolted to an actual race car than it is to get a BBL. It seems way safer to me for everybody involved, and they end up going like 190 miles an hour. So
yeah, well, also dangerous. Both equally as dangerous. Well, Mun's probably more dangerous.
Yeah,
by a lot. It's not Formula One.
But does it affect other small teams, other smaller teams like Ferrari? I don't know if small is quite the word for an operation like Ferrari. However, for teams not quite on that sort of mega industrial level, as you know, a Mercedes, for instance, you're looking at, yeah, this is a zero sum game. When we say zero sum, that means there's only so many points on the board. If you take something, somebody else has to lose something. And I think that McLaren improving makes Aston Martin's sudden gains look slightly less impressive, right? Like it's already been half a season of improvement, and already I guarantee you some Aston Martin fans are like, we could be doing a little bit better. No. Think about where you were. Don't get spoiled. Right.
Think about where you came from. I think, though, that's a good point. The Aston Martin pace, though, has been consistent through the first half of the season. They had a tough weekend, and I think they will be back towards the front moving forward. I think we know that certain circuits favor certain cars and certain drivers, and so there's like tons of variables that go into effect. And we haven't seen McLaren be consistent over more than, you know, the past week and a half, I think you could say. So there's a lot that could happen. There's a lot of variables in play, but it certainly doesn't help Mercedes to have another car in the mix that is going to be competing for that podium spot behind Verstappen and Alonso, which is kind of like where it seemed like things were settling in over the last few weeks.
Settling in, remember, it will make things, yes, tougher on everyone else around, which is why we can say with, I think, some real honesty, there still is some interesting stuff awaiting us down the road. Mm-hmm. What do we have next? We have Hungary.
Hungary on July 27th or something like that.
Yes.
I don't know the date.
Going to take a substantial European-sized break and come back to another continental race in Hungary. It should be fascinating, if not necessarily a mystery as to who's going to be at least number one. If not
July
23rd,
it's
margins.
July 23rd. Yes. Yeah, we'll be back after that, right? We took a little break last week for Spencer's vacay, but we'll be back, and we're excited.
I too took a European size break. It was lovely. Aww. I recommend.
I'm gonna do that next week.
Excellent, excellent. Well, we will see you guys for the Hungary race. For Jessica Smetana, this is Spencer Hall for DNF. Happy racing to you all.
God save the king.
God save the king.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Texting privacy policy and terms and conditions posted at textplan.us. Texting enrolls for occurring automated text marketing messages. Message and data rates may apply. Reply stop to opt out. Individual results may vary. Consult a doctor prior to use.
You've lost so much weight. How'd you do it?
I got medical treatment for weight loss through Zelty and lost 50 pounds. I struggled for the longest time, but Zelty makes it easy and affordable to get weight loss treatment 100% online. Zelty providers can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications clinically shown to help people lose weight, like Wegovy, Zepbound, and others.
I've heard those medications can help you lose weight, but aren't they expensive?
Zelty can help get the medication covered by insurance, so it's as little as $0 a month.
What if you don't have insurance?
No problem. Zelty may be able to help you get other GLP-1 medications for 80 to 90% off the price of name brand medications.
I'm ready to start losing weight. How do I get started with Zelty?
Just text.
Text Thin to 200-300 to get started today with Zelty and see if weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound are right for you. Don't wait. Text now for a link to your exclusive offer. Text Thin to 200-300. That's Thin to 200-300. Thin to 200-300.